Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Go ahead. Poke the Blair. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we are back. The post-mortem roundtable with Shai Davidi and Mike Wilner. I'm going to get this out of the way. Mustard Robin on Twitter. Oh, wrong one. Mustard Robin has a legitimate question. Palace fan Pete says, hey, Jeff, can you ask Wilnerness 590 this for me? Maybe a bit rhetorical, but is it still too early?
And I will reply...
Because I know you've wanted to get this off your chest.
Here's
for
a tweet
for a month.
From last night, from at Joey Badoey.
Yes.
The funniest thing is that you're such a moron that you don't understand he said that when it was early. The truth of the matter is that I don't say it's early in September or in August, but
you said it was early on September 2nd.
No, I didn't.
Yes, he did.
No, I didn't.
Yes, he did. September 2nd, Blue Jays talk. I knew you. See, I'm prepared.
It's not true. It's like, get the tapes. Ranch, get the tapes. Brett Armstrong,
September 2nd.
I did not say it was. I may have said it's early in the month.
No, you
said. I may have said it's early in the game.
I'm just kidding.
But no, the truth of the matter is...
I had fun with you on Twitter with it's early. I mean, I would. You know what I would do?
The level of I don't want to say it. With all this it's early crap is that it's all crap. I mean, the truth of the matter is, last year when I got a lot of...
Just going to dig himself a hole here, isn't
it? I got a lot of heat for the it's early stuff last year in mid-May... 6 weeks later, they were at 500.
Right.
And, you know, look at the Houston Astros in the mid 2000s.
This was meant as just kind of a joke,
I know,
a nice
you know
soft way in.
But
now
it's getting to you. Because there are a lot of people who are doing this. It's early crap.
I mean, I did.
It's only early when it's early.
I had nothing to do with a Jays game. I said, I know what I'll do. I'll just send out a tweet and say it's early.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm like that.
I appreciate that.
I do have a certain amount of jackass in me. You know that as well as anybody. Anyhow, well, I've given you a chance to defend yourself, I think.
Now give Shai one.
Shai never gets nasty, angry tweets.
No, it's true. People love Shai.
No, I get my share, but I don't get the venom that you two gentlemen seem to trigger out of people or elicit from people.
I don't usually get venom because I just block people.
They
get their one shot of venom. Block and report as spam is still my favorite thing, but I don't do that anymore because that's just a little... That's a little over the top. All right. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked the callers in the first hour. I'll start with you, Mike. One word to describe this Blue Jays season. I use the word teasing.
That's an interesting word.
It conjures up all sorts of disturbing images, too, I know.
But. To you, perhaps. My initial thought is disappointing. But then... They exceeded most people's expectations this year. But I still think they kind of had it, and this should have been a playoff team, and therefore I'm disappointed. But I do think that, you know, when I think back to March, talking to people, Vegas had them at 80.5 wins for the season. They beat that. Most people believed that they were a fourth or fifth place team.
83,
in the
84.
Division. Yeah, yeah. I thought... 85 to 89, and they didn't quite get there. I remember Mitch Williams on MLB TV. They were going over their predictions, and he said, I can't tell you anything about the American League East except for one thing, and that's that the Blue Jays are going to finish last. And so those were the expectations leading into the season. They exceeded them, but I still think they had it, and they let it go. They didn't get it done, and so disappointing.
Mr. Davidi?
I'm going to go with waste or wasteful. I mean, just because of where they were. And I don't know that what the expectations were coming into the season become relevant when on June 6th, You're 14 games over 500, have a 6-game lead in your division, and the opportunity is there before you. And the fact that they didn't do more with that, I mean, they didn't have to be a very good team from that point on out to make the playoffs. And even when they went through a dreadful August, if they had had a better September, because of the way everyone else in the wild card race basically didn't want to win a spot, they still could have been in it. And if they had made a move at the deadline, that might have changed things. Or if they're a couple wins better in August, maybe September's a little bit easier, and all of a sudden the opportunity's before us. So to me, this season is a huge waste for this team, because this was as good of an opportunity that they've had since 93, but yet we're still playoff free.
It's funny, you look, and we were Shai and I were talking about this before. You look at how the wildcard contenders did in September. Oakland 10-16, Yankees 14-13, Seattle 14-13, Cleveland 14-13. Kansas City at 15-11 is the only one who had a good September.
Well, and that's the point that a lot of people have made is, and I think this wasteful, I think, is a good description, Shai. If you look around, look at the things that happened in the American League East, look at the wild card, how that materialized. Mm-hmm. Really, this is an outlier. I hate using that word. This is kind of a unique season in a lot of ways. And it was unique to the point where the door was open in the American League East. Unfortunately for the Blue Jays, it was the Baltimore Orioles who stepped through that. It's the Blue Jays postmortem roundtable on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Jeff Blair, Shai Davidi, and Mike Wilner. I've asked for people to send in questions on Twitter. My Twitter handle is SNJeffBlair. Mike's is at Wilderness590. Shai's is at Shai Davidi. And we'll get to your questions. There was a pretty good question here right out of the gate from Mustard Robin Brown. AA says the bullpen is an off-season priority. Is it the most pressing need, though? Mike, I'll start with you.
Is the bullpen the most pressing need?
The most pressing need.
I don't think so. I mean, I think bullpens kind of, they go through their ups and downs. I expect Steve Delabar to be able to be a strong contributor to the bullpen again next season. I think Brett Cecil should be okay. They need to address it, but is that the biggest priority? Did the bullpen cost them a playoff spot this year? I don't think so. I think it was their failure to score any runs in August and in a lot of September that did it. It needs to be addressed. You need to add a couple of guys, but I don't know that that's a top priority.
I disagree, Mike. I think the fact they were a run worse in ERA than the Baltimore Orioles in bullpen ERA. They were 12th in the American League out of 15 teams.
Oh, they were 26th in starting pitching ERA.
What? Again, you look back. If they're better, if that bullpen is better in April, marginally, when they gave away 7 or 8 games and they win half those games, you know, you're right on the cusp of a wild card spot.
Yeah, they had that 5-11 and the bullpen was awful.
And then you look at who's coming back. The only guys you can really consider sure things coming back next year, Cecil, Loop, Jenkins, Redmond, who are under control and who you can legitimately count on. I mean, it's great to say Steve Delabar can come back and be a contributor. And yeah, if it happens, wonderful. But are you going to bank on that?
No, I don't think you can. And should you bank on it?
Right. So, I mean, you can't factor that into your planning. You have to have depth and options. And they don't have anyone in-house who you can say, this is going to be our closer and feel good about consistently running them out there in the ninth. Could Cecil do it? Maybe. Could Delabar do it if he comes back? Maybe. Well, that's a whole other discussion, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But I think if you don't have stability in that bullpen, it's just going to trickle down. It doesn't allow you to win close games late. And I don't remember what the final number was in
15-20.
15-20. You know, the bullpen's a factor in that. Yes, the offense is a factor in that, but this team was 4th or 5th in runs scored in the American League.
But maybe here's where I come from on that, is that I don't think that there are relievers out there that you can't absolutely count on. That's what when bullpens are funny things,
sure.
And that, you know, you go out and you sign 2 or 3 people, you have no, well, you don't have much of an idea what you're going to get.
Well,
that's what scares me.
I think the options that are out, some of the options that are out there, not necessarily the big name guys, but, you know, Jeff, we ran through some names yesterday. I think Jason Mott's an interesting guy. Mm-hmm. Luke Gregerson's an interesting name to me. You know, guys who are going to give you options and who have some track record and who have proven that they can get you big outs late in games. Now, does that guarantee that they're going to have great seasons? No, but I think you'd feel a lot better having a couple of relievers like that in your bullpen than going into the season saying, oh, well, here's what we got. We'll figure the rest out and see what happens.
You know, here's why I think, and I've said this, why I think Aaron Sanchez is probably going to end up closing next year. I think they'll bring guys in to close, and I think they'll do exactly what Alex said. They'll take that approach. You're not going to go out and get a trade for an established closer. Get somebody who could help you out at the back end, and, you know, a guy who's shown in the past as a setup guy, he can pitch in some high leverage situations, so you transition him into closer's role. I think they'll get that guy, but I just think at the end of the day they're going to look at Aaron Sanchez and go, where, if we operate under the assumption that 4/5 of this rotation returns, which I think is pretty safe, where could he help us the most in terms of winning a division or going to the wild card or contending for a wild card? I think it's out of the bullpen. And I'll tell you what, if they weren't thinking about it, I think they probably would have shut Aaron Sanchez down a couple of weeks ago. Good job. Did it well. You got your feet wet. Nice job. See ya.
But I think that's why they used him this year, because this year they needed someone to step in.
Mm-hmm. They needed Sergio Santos.
Right, he was going to reach his innings limit.
But they kept...
Why wouldn't they keep using him?
Well, because here's the thing. I'm saying I would, but I think the reason you're doing this is because you want to see if this guy can close.
I think they figured that out in August.
Right, and that was basically the reason he became so dependent and such a critical part of that bullpen was, to be honest, desperation. I mean, beyond Brett Cecil, All-Star break on, who did you feel certain about how they were going to pitch on any given night?
Santos didn't do it. McGowan didn't do it. They needed somebody to do it, and he was doing it.
Right. And my problem, or my concern, if Sanchez ends up in the bullpen next year, is that he is the most likely in-house candidate to grow into a Justin Verlander type of pitcher. And not to say he's going to be Justin Verlander, but to have that kind of elite ace impact. If you leave him in the bullpen for another year, that's another year he's not building up his physical base to be able to throw 200 innings. It's another year he's not using his breaking pitches. He's not developing his big breaking pitches. He's not learning how to turn over big league lineups. You're just stunting his development. And, you know, you just think about how that messed with Kelvin Escobar, how that messed with Dustin McGowan. And, you know, there, Naftali Feliz, Joba Chamberlain, Daniel Bard. I mean, there's so many examples of this. If you end up screwing him up, it's something that could haunt the franchise for a while.
What if you Chris Medlin him? Would you do that? Pitch him out of the bullpen till the middle of June and then transition him into the rotation?
Totally.
But then you have to find a closer.
But then,
right?
Yeah. But I think reading, you know, sort of parsing Alex's words about in his postseason news conference yesterday about innings playing a role in how they use Aaron Sanchez, I can absolutely see them doing that. I can absolutely see them doing that.
You got him at 28 innings by June 1st.
Yeah.
Then let's go.
Yeah. Oh, I can absolutely see that happening. But I got a sense of coming out of spring training, he might be the guy. You know, and again, here we are the day after the regular season. We don't know what moves Alex is going to make, or we don't know how many of the starting pitchers are going to be back, and that actually leads me to my next question.
I'm just looking at this free agent list, though.
Yep.
Because Alex, I think, was very clear about talking about non-closers that he wanted to bring in and give a shot to close.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys mentioned Mott, and you mentioned...
Gregerson.
And there's also Mike Adams, who's had some incredible success as a setup man. Matt Belisle, Jared Burton.
Do you take a look at Sergio Romo?
He's not on the list.
He's you're looking at relievers, there should be a section for closers. He's on that list.
There he is.
He's an interesting guy.
But he's lost his job in consecutive seasons as a closer.
Yes, and his velocity is down dramatically.
And he's a smaller guy. Well,
he's only 33. I didn't realize that.
K-Rod?
Yeah.
Why do I see Frank why do I see Frank Francisco in there? It's the Blue Jays post-mortem roundtable with Jeff Blair.
It's true. They have not had good success with relievers named Francisco, whether they be Frank or Cordero.
Might avoid that. GWL Baseball wants to know if both Dickey and Burley will be back in 2015.
I can see one of them perhaps being moved to create some flexibility and open up some space on the roster. And I my sense is that there's a lot that the Blue Jays are going to be open to, and they're going to try to play this in a bunch of different ways. And because there's some financial flexibility, but not that much, you know, the way based on a payroll similar to this year's, roughly $20 to $33 million, depending on whether they pick up the options on Happ and Lind to fill out the back end of the roster. So if they need to move a bit more money, those are two obvious spots, because then at that point you're creating room for someone like Sanchez or maybe Daniel Norris or even Kendall Graveman, who I don't know that anyone's decided for certain that he's only going to be a reliever. There's some people who think that his stuff could play and could turn over a couple lineups.
Gibby seems to really like him.
Yeah, and I think
Rick Langford, a lot of people really like
right.
him.
Right.
He's got a lot of people in this corner.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way that cutter played this year, and plus he also added a bit of velocity. We're all like, yeah, cutter, but he also picked up a little bit of velocity, which helped his sinker as well. So the Blue Jays aren't certain what he is just yet. So, I mean, they have some options, and they have some depth there. So could you move, you know, someone like R.A. Dickey to, you know, address a hole in the outfield, you know, a hole in the infield? And at that point, you also open up the backup catcher's role, and you can get someone who can play on a more regular basis than Josh Tolley. And I think that's going to be important with Deonor Navarro, because one thing that we saw is that when he broke down, or he got a little bit tired, he wasn't the same guy. And if they could keep him more effective, that's a bunch of little incremental improvements that could end up making a big difference.
And he only caught 107 games, which I thought they handled him really, really well. A lot of that was Eric Kratz in the early part of the season, but he's gone. But let me ask you this, as far as those two pitchers are concerned. I have been on the track for a while that Mark Burley might be declining, and he might be better off in a St. Louis or a National League place where he can maybe be more effective and you save that $19 million. But then I wonder, how much of that contract are you going to have to eat to get value back? And if you are eating a third of it, then are Dickey and Burley not almost equal in the trade market?
Yeah, I you know, it's funny. I've gone back and forth in this because I've been really clear that I think, based on what I've seen from them, in a perfect world, you'd like to trade Burley because he's $7 million a year more than Dickey. But you're right. If you've got to eat $6 million of that. And you know, the other thing, I've kind of come around to this in the past couple of weeks just from talking to people and hearing some things people have said. I'm beginning to wonder if maybe you don't need Mark Burley here. And I'm not talking about clubhouse chemistry, because I think winning is the ultimate, makes good clubhouse chemistry. But when I see Marcus Stroman, you know, sending out tweets about the guy, and I think if we operate under the assumption you're going to have Drew Hutchison, Marcus Stroman going forward for sure, Aaron Sanchez will be in this team in one form or another, maybe Daniel Norris. Alex spent so much time talking about durability being important. Now, why would you get rid of a guy who is not only sort of the embodiment of durability, but has shown that he's willing to mentor the younger pitchers as well?
That's it.
And Ari Dickey, you know, you guys know as well as I do. I mean, Shai, you're around the clubhouse more than I am. Ari Dickey's not the warmest human being on the planet.
Yeah, and you know,
he's a different guy, and
he's insular to himself.
His process is also different than that of all the other pitchers too.
Exactly,
and you know, I've seen how the young pitchers have gravitated to Mark Burley, and Mark Burley is big brother to them, and he's also the prototype of what you want your young players to learn from, right? And to me, one of the greatest examples of what Mark Burley brings to you is the game in Baltimore after Stroman missed on the pitch on Caleb Joseph, and things are going. Mark Burley was right there talking to him, saying, "Look, this is what you didn't handle that well," and giving us a message right there. And that's a huge part of Mark Burley's value. Now, the other element to consider is that Burley's contract's up. Dickey comes with a very reasonable $12 million, $13 million option for 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the lower salary plus the option, and there's a lot more value in that contract on the trade market than there would be in Burley's.
Right, and you're essentially, I don't think anybody is acquiring R.A. Dickey thinking we're going to bring this guy in to be our ace, but if you're a team like Cincinnati or somebody who's kind of on the cusp, maybe you look at R.A. Dickey as 200 innings for $12 million. And I think the other thing we have to keep in mind is I'm not entirely certain it's as simple as you trade R.A. Dickey, you get young position player in return.
No, I don't think it is.
It's going to be you trade R.A. Dickey plus, and you get young position player plus in return.
Maybe. But here's a question for all the stuff that you both said about Mark Burley, all of which I believe to be true, are all those, I don't want to say intangibles because they're tangible, but are all those behind-the-scenes-y type things plus basically a fourth starter's performance worth 15% of your payroll?
Yeah, that's, I mean, no. The answer to that is no.
No.
The answer to that is no. But the payroll's not, the Jays' payroll doesn't exist in a perfect world right now.
Right.
There are issues with this payroll, and you're not going to be able to get rid of all those issues.
Burley, Happ, Stroman, Sanchez, Hutchison combined make $1.5 million more than Mark Burley.
Yeah.
Sorry, did I say Burley in there? Dickey, Happ.
Dickey, yeah.
Stroman, well,
yeah, because you're getting
Hutchison,
four-fifths your rotation.
About $20.5 million, and Burley makes 19.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, but again, if you have to toss $6 million in to get a deal done,
right, then, yeah, that changes.
It stops making sense.
Where do we stand on Melky Cabrera? I mean, we all agree we'd like to have him back. Is anybody surprised that, or maybe Shai, Mike, maybe you've got some insight in this. Are you surprised that there wasn't more of an attempt to try to sign him by the All-Star break? Or do you think there was and we just don't know about it? What's your gut feeling on? Because I know Alex has been really...
I wouldn't be surprised if there was an attempt, because during the All-Star break, the Blue Jays also talked to Casey Jansen, and that went nowhere.
Right, but it makes no sense if you talk to one guy, you think you talked to, at least talk to the other guy.
And the fact that Alex has been so public in saying, you know, we're going to try to get him back, we think we have some common ground. I mean, he never divulges this much about a negotiation with
a player.
Very true. So I think there's some earnestness there. But if you're Melky Cabrera and you have that season and you start getting towards the All-Star break and you're trying to make up perhaps for lost money in your previous contract, unless the Blue Jays offer is spectacular, you're going to the free agent market to see what's out there. So my perception is that it was always going to be ridiculously difficult for the Blue Jays to get him signed to an extension beforehand. And I think it's going to be really tough for them now. I mean, you know, I talked to him briefly yesterday after the game, and he said, you know, again, you know, I like it here. What's going to happen, he doesn't know. Referred me to his agent, which is, you know, standard practice, I think, for a player at this time. But the perception that I've gotten, or some talking to some of his teammates, you know, they're looking at the future as if Cabrera's not coming back. because the market for him is going to be active, and it's going to be hard for the Blue Jays to re-sign him and plug all their holes. Now, could the market not be as robust for him as we expect? Perhaps, but I really doubt that because it's just so, so thin.
He's the only true corner outfielder
on the market,
productive offensively on the market. I mean, consider Nelson Cruz to be a DH. Yeah. But, yeah, so the market, I think, is going to be rather robust. But Alex said yesterday in his news conference that he didn't believe the Blue Jays' five-year policy was going to stand in the way, which makes me think he doesn't anticipate any Shin-Soo Choo-like offers coming Cabrera's way.
Which, yep, I didn't think was ever going to be an option.
No.
5 years is probably the most he gets.
Yeah, I mean, I made the point talking to a scout that, I mean, they'd been on Melky for a month towards the end of the season, and his point was the same thing. I just asked him, do you think anybody would go more than five? And he said, there's still so many questions about this guy that I can't see anybody going six or seven with him. I mean, I think the Jays will be competitive for him. I just think it's going to come down to, you know, somebody going to come along and...
Only takes one.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I think Alex also made the point that it was an interesting point he made on Brady and Walker, too. The other thing is sometimes you don't know what the market for a player is until somebody comes in and throws their marker down and says, this is what we're willing to pay. At that point, you go, okay, well, I've got one person here who says it's whatever, 14 and a half or 15 million a year. And, right, and it's entirely possible that that's at work here.
You two talk to a lot more agents than I do, which I got to get on that. But how much backdoor communication do you think is going on?
Tons.
How much of an idea does Melky have of what he might be offered on the market?
I think they're pretty...
Right. I think they've gotten a sense of kind of where the interest is going to go. And it's interesting, you know, I talked to a rival agent about Melky a couple weeks ago. And I said to him, what do you think Rusny Castillo does to this market? And he said what he said, which was interesting. He said, a guy who without any baggage or anything, mm-hmm, like that, teams might be willing to roll the dice a little bit more because it's still unknown and you're buying some potential there and the warts haven't been exposed. Everyone knows about Melky's warts. And he thought that might limit his market a little bit. It might bring the price down and would prevent him from getting, you know, the five, six yeah, year. He thought that he'd probably end up with 3 years and that maybe a fourth year.
See, the other thing, too, is I'm sure Alex wouldn't come out and say this, and we're going to take a break in a minute, but I'm sure Alex wouldn't say this, but he's got to think that the fact that he hasn't, that it hasn't been made public knowledge yet that they have tried to sign Melky, or he's got to think that maybe there are teams out there going, you know, do they know something we don't know about this guy? I mean, they've had him for a couple of years.
They didn't do an Edwin All-Star
thing? And we don't know. I mean, as Shai said, they may have, and it may have been one phone call, and Melky's people said, you know, no, we're gonna wait. We're gonna let the market play out. But I mean, I know from talking to this one scout who I've known for a while. He's a former player, and you know, he said that in their organization. I mean, that was one of the, when they had their meetings before they went out to scout free agents, one of the questions that came up is, this guy's having such a great year, seems to like it there. He's playing every day in artificial turf. Why the hell haven't they signed him? So that might be at work as well. We've got a lot to talk about. Alex Anthopoulos, John Gibbons, Paul Beeston, the future of the Jays management, where this organization is going. This is the Blue Jays Postmortem Roundtable with Jeff Blair, Shai Davidi, and Mike Wilner on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're back with the Postmortem Roundtable. It is Mike Wilner of the Blue Jays talk, third man in the booth. and Sportsnet.ca. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. And Jeff Blair, as we post-mortem, or I guess we mort.
We don't mort.
We don't mort,
they
whatever.
Morted.
We post-mort the Toronto Blue Jays and the 2014 season that was. We're going to get to Colby Rasmus in a minute, but I want to ask you about John Gibbons, Alex Anthopoulos, and I almost said Mike Wilner. I don't know why. And Paul Beeston. Foreshadowing. Yeah, maybe.
Lord help us.
God, would that be something? What do you think would happen if he was GM? Would he exceed Alex's 9,000 word news conference yesterday? That was amazing, by the way.
9,090 words.
That was parliamentary. We're all in agreement, I think, that John Gibbons should be back next year.
I think
as
so.
Manager.
I think so. I mean, there were a couple of things in September that were confusing, but in the overall, he's a guy who knows how to use the talent he's got.
Yeah. We're all okay with Alex Anthopoulos coming back?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I think...
I know why, but I wonder, why are you okay with
it? I like the things that he does. I think he gets too cute sometimes,
mm-hmm.
but I think in the overall, when you look at the moves he makes, they tend to... There aren't a lot that make you shake your head. And, you know,
for like all the waiver acquisitions or a majority of the waiver acquisitions.
I don't know. I kind of think you take shots.
You like waiver acquisitions.
I do.
You're a waiver porn guy.
Kind of.
You are. You like yourself a little Nolan Reimold.
I like the Cole Gillespie moves.
Fishnet stockings and black spikes. You like that.
Cole Gillespie move. I thought Reimold was okay. I was surprised they cut bait on him as quickly as they did, but I think they realized he might just be a piece of glass when he lands on the DL from running to second to third on a ground out. I'll take a look at free talent any chance I can get. You know, you
that
look
sounded
back,
dirty.
Only because you made it dirty. You look back at all the things he did, and yeah, they stuck with Juan Francisco too long. And in retrospect, shouldn't have traded Yan Gomes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anyone who could have seen that coming. But other than that, all the moves, you can even say that the Marlins trade and the Dickey trade have failed, but you got to take those shots.
And I mean, and Shai, I think, you know, we've talked about it. If Alex doesn't make those deals, the teams, to me, it's no closer to the playoffs.
Right.
And, you know, people are saying, well, but there's extra money left over. That's true, but it's not like they're going out and signing. That money's going to be used to bring in a free agent. I think Alex, frankly, deserves to be back. Well, first of all, because I think the proper way to run a Major League Baseball franchise now is to have a lot of stability in the general manager's office and the manager's office. I think that's been proven. I mean, the Giants could have cut bait and Bruce Bochy and Brian Sabian four times in the last 10 years, and they didn't. I know their records are different than Alex and John. But the other thing, too, Shai, is after, what, how many years? I'm looking at a Jays organization that's finally produced two homegrown starting pitchers, likely a third, with a couple more pretty close. And I think we're going to start to see some of the fruits that in terms of position players as well. And the one thing Alex said he wanted to do when he took over was get an assembly line of prospects here. So it seems to me that he's lived up to that part of his commitment.
Right. And to me, that's where the whole decision-making lies. In judging Alex, is the farm system starting to produce the type of players they need? Because if you're gonna compete with the Tampa Bay Rays and you're gonna outdo the Yankees and the Red Sox and stay tight with the Orioles, you're going to have homegrown dominant starting pitching. And like you said, this is the first time, I mean, since basically the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s,
Escobar, Halliday,
Carpenter. Okay. That they have some guys who look like they're going to be legitimate pieces of a rotation. Plus Dalton Pompey is coming. There's a gap after that group. You get down to the A-ball guys with the Robert Osunas, Tirado, Barreto, and some of those kids. So there is a bit of a gap in the farm system, but you look at it now, this farm system over the past few years has been as good as it's been in nearly two decades. And that is where his worth is. Because just like you said, when he came in, That was part of his plan. And it's also where a lot of the resources from 2010 to 2012 were devoted to building up that farm system, not only in the draft, but also in Latin America.
Is there something to be said for his ability to, and I mean, saying this after I say shouldn't have traded Yan Gomes, but his ability to recognize when things are going south and try to get ahead of that? I'm thinking of the deal for Jahap, where they moved seven kids and six of them probably aren't going to amount to anything. You know, he recognized that, traded them when they had value, and got a big league starter for them.
Yeah, and Brett Wallace for Anthony Gost. I mean, Brett Wallace was on the verge of collapsing at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And not that Anthony Gost has turned into anything, but, you know, you can at least see at minimum a fourth outfielder there, perhaps more.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play a clip from Alex Anthopoulos, joined Brady and Walker this morning, and I'll play the clip, and then I'll ask you guys about Colby Rasmus. Can you go ahead?
So Gibby at the end, he makes the lineup out, and, you know, obviously we want to win as many games as we could, and I think even at the beginning of September, I was interviewed, I think we were in Tampa, when we made all those call-ups, said, look, we're going to try to make one of these big runs. And Colby was inconsistent up and down. He had a great start to the year, especially with all those home runs like you talked about. Went on the DL, came back, kind of up and down. And Gibby felt really strongly that, you know, our best team was going to be going with some of the other guys, you know, whether it was a guy like Ghost or even a guy like Pilar. Pilar had torn the cover off the ball in the minor leagues the entire year and felt like our best team was going to be with those guys.
Shai, I want to ask you about this because there, I think there was, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I think the question of Alex was, for a lot of people, that the thing with Rasmus almost seemed personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thinking was it Alex, quote unquote, making the lineup out for Gibby? Was it Gibby who just, you know, washing his hands of Colby Rasmus? What happened with Colby Rasmus this year?
Well, there are a lot of layers to that onion. So
I know. Let's not cry while we peel
well,
the onion.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we'll be the ones who are
Wilner's crying.
But okay, let's start this way. At its most basic, that decision was made, you know, I mean, John Gibbons legitimately believed that the team was better off with Pilar, Ghosts, platooning in center for defensive reasons, as because offensively it wasn't so all or nothing. They could do little things, sacrifice bunt, you know, move guys over, steal a base, take an extra bag here and there. And with Rasmus, it was just, you're either getting a home run or it's a strikeout. And oftentimes three or four strikeouts in a game. So that is what I think was the tipping point. Now, the fact that for the majority of the 27-5 stretch through May and June, it was also Ghost and Pilar in center field also factored in his decision. And I think Colby, because of the various issues that he's had, you know, he and Kevin Seitzer never got on the same page, particularly after the All-Star break when he reverted back to getting his hands way out. He wasn't in a good mental state. He was trying to play for a contract because it's his free agent walk year, and he needed to pop big numbers and wasn't necessarily going to fit into the framework of what they were trying to do. It just wasn't a fit, and they sensed that this is the best group that we have. And surprisingly, because one thing the Blue Jays have been very careful of over the years is not taking away playing time from a player as he's about to hit the open market.
Yeah.
And I think it was perceived in some corners of the clubhouse as a decision that came from the front office, but I think it was 100% from the manager's office and a decision based on these are the guys I want to go with to try and win these games.
Mike, I think you were there. It was a conversation with John Gibbons around the batting cage. Shai, you might have been there, where John Gibbons used the phrase dead ass, which is not the first time he used it, but he just said, we've got a lot of real dead ass guys on this team, and Colby was one of the guys he was talking about. And it wasn't like just sort of a plaintive, oh my God, we've got, but he was just talking about the personality of the team, and he's used the phrase extreme personalities, and he just said, man, we've got a lot of just real low-energy, dead-ass guys around here. I got the sense that very early in the year, John kind of started to waver on Colby, didn't you? I think he was. They had a lot of concerns about his defense to begin with.
Well, to suggest that he started to waver on him, I guess would mean that he was pretty high on him at some point.
I think but
I think after last year, I don't think it took too long after last year. Last year was a great season for Colby.
Right.
And this year, it's amazing. I looked at it, by the way, and he finished third on the team in home runs.
I think his OPS is like fifth or something like that in the team.
Oh, I hope not. But it might have been. It was
all slow.
Around 700, no? That's damning with faint praise,
could
if you're
wrong. I thought it was. Anyhow.
But I just. I really think that they. I don't want to use the word outgrew. They just had enough of each other.
They grew apart. It happens.
Colby.
Aaron Hill and the Jays, it happens.
Yeah.
It happens where teams just grow apart.
But I will say that I was surprised that that he didn't find his way back into a more regular role when Melky Cabrera got hurt.
We've only got.
He was actually sixth on the team in OPS.
Sixth?
Juan Francisco was fifth.
Talk about damning with faint praise. We've got less than a couple of minutes here. I want to talk about Jose Bautista. Shy, you've got a Q&A with him, is it? And I read the Q&A, my email. The first thing that I thought of, this is a guy who seems to me to be really invested in this team.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's a perception out there, I think, that Jose Bautista, it's only a matter of weeks before he goes in and says to Alex, you know what? It's been fun. Thank you for resurrecting my career. Get me the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And I'm not. You don't get that read, do you?
No. One thing that's really got to stop is this whole we got to trade Jose Bautista nonsense.
Yeah, I've stopped it this year. I admit, I threw my hand up.
It's, I don't know why people are in a rush to get rid of him.
Toronto.
Yeah.
This guy's really good.
The city certainly likes to eat its superstars. But, I mean, look at his numbers this season. And I kind of broke down a bunch of things yesterday. I even looked into his productive out percentage and his percentage of getting runners in from third base with less than two outs. And they're both well above league average, both better than they've been in recent years. I mean, he really, to me, took a significant step forward into becoming a complete hitter this year. You factor in all the other elements that he brings, like, he's not the problem, and dealing him away doesn't necessarily make things better. So that part of it, I think we need to turn the page on that and stop talking about it. But the thing that struck me from that Q&A, where we talked about the Blue Jays being more opportunistic and moving base runners, and he said, this is maybe something that we need to, strategy-wise, look at trying to move the offense into a bit of a different direction. I thought that coming from him, that was very significant.
Mike, just very briefly, I mean, I know you've been one of the anti-trading Bautista.
It's ridiculous. I just don't think that there's any way to improve by trading Jose Bautista. I think, you know, you've got an elite-level offensive performer who put up MVP-type numbers this year and has in three of the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth would you want to trade him?
The only thing you would do is get maybe a younger Jose Bautista, and that's just not going to happen. I mean, people aren't going to trade you a younger Jose Bautista for Jose Bautista.
Why would they?
It's just not going to happen. Guys, I really appreciate you doing this. I know you had a long night last night, Mr. Wilner, or Mr. Davidi. Mr. Wilner, you don't drink, so you had an easy night.
Yeah, easier than, but it was fun watching, I got to say. for a lot of those people, that was a blast. It's good to get together with all, you know, you're a family when you're together all the time for 7 months.
Well, I don't know
months.
About a family. But.
Well, every family has the crazy uncle that nobody can stand. And that's, of course, well.
Anyway.
But it's fun, and it's so weird to wake up and not quite know what you're going to do that day after all you have to do is look at a baseball schedule to know where you're going to be.
Listen, I want to thank both you guys for coming in. Thank you very much for the bagel, and both of you gentlemen for your availability. You were unfailing in your availability for us this year in this show. And sometimes it was at god-awful hours in the morning. Either you were taking kids to school or you just woken up on the road, or Shy, in your case, were just coming in at that particular time. So I really appreciate everything you guys did for us this year. And it was greatly appreciated. It was a lot of fun. And when does spring training start, Wilner? How many days?
I don't know how many days, but I'll go with February 22nd. It's going to be a little bit later this year. But we love you, Uncle Jeff.
You love the weird old uncle, right?
Right, despite all the awkward moments.
Yeah, well, there were fewer awkward moments this year. I just wasn't around as much. But. see what happens. Guys, thanks so much for doing this. Guess what? We're going to shift focus to the Leafs. Would you believe Dave Clarkson got himself injured in an exhibition game? Who saw that coming? Back with more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.